The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Back here on the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. We've got Harbortown in the rear view. We're counting down the days until the PGA Championship at Bethpage. That's right. It's coming up in less than a month, y'all. Circle your calendars. Get it ready. It's on CBS. We got much more hard-hitting content previewing the PGA as we do for all of our majors coming up in a little bit. But we've got some team action coming up this weekend in Louisiana. And I feel like as we've readjusted the schedule, have we normally had the TPC Louisiana or at least the Zurich Classic? Has this been at a steamier point in the Louisiana climate calendar before, or has it always been right here in this late April weekend?
It feels like, yeah, here or later. I don't think it's been earlier.
No, for sure has not been earlier. Because I think that almost universally, my heart goes out to those. This is a, like, shout out to Tiger Woods. You might need to change your shirt in the mid-round kind of heat when you get down there.
I envision TPC Louisiana being a place where it's steamy like 10 months out of the year.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I just, and I know that's probably not true, but that's how I envision it. So, we might have some J.B. Holmes issues this weekend.
What are the J.B. Holmes issues?
Oh, he doesn't wear deodorant.
Hold on. All right. Well, J.B. Holmes for this, he's teamed up with Bubba Watson. For the Zurich Classic. We will, by the way, we're going to get to some of our picks. We're going to get to some of our dream scenarios at the Zurich Classic. You know, maybe the pairings that we would like to see out there. But this is startling and stunning news that you brought to my attention. So J.B. Holmes does not wear deodorant.
That's the story. That's the big narrative around JB other than the slow play.
Man,
no deodorant.
Poor guy can just bomb it off the tee, and that's number three on his trading card behind slow play and no deodorant. Is this a recent discovery, or is this something that you've just always had in your back pocket and we've just never come across it before?
Yeah, we don't do a ton of JB Holmes talk on here. And sometimes I forget about it. Andy and Porath talk about it sometimes on the Shotgun Start. And it gets referenced and, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I've never, like, I haven't really been around him. Never played a round of golf with him. So I don't, like, I can't, like, confirm it 100%. But apparently that's the deal.
Well, yeah, we could have real situations going on in that case. Do you... As the schedule has been rearranged, I think that I was planning out sort of my next month, trying to figure out, you know, when we are going to obviously be delivering all of these excellent podcasts to the earbuds, the AirPods, and the office speakers of so many of our loyal listeners and subscribers. And I really have found myself enthused, excited, and energized by the fact that we do have the PGA Championship coming up. You know, some of that probably does have to do with what happened at the Masters. Like, if this was a Masters year where we were coming off of, you know, Schwartzel, or if we were coming off of, you know, maybe, you know, even coming off of Patrick Reed, I guess with Ricky and Jordan Spieth, there were other non-Patrick Reed storylines to delve into, but certainly when it's Tiger Woods winning his fifth green jacket, that is going to just boost up the hype for whatever the next major championship is. And so it is the PGA. We don't have the long layoff. And so I would say that, like, if you're looking for some instant grades or instant reactions to, you know, how the schedule change is going to be from the minds of those who are trying to keep the sports world's attention near to golf, it's never going to hover over golf, but this is probably about as good as you could have asked in terms of the way that this has fallen for the game.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, this year going Augusta, Bethpage, Pebble, all places where Tiger has won, and he just won the first one. I mean, it's kind of a, like, when the PGA of America decided to do this, like, that was, like, literally the best case scenario.
Yes.
For them.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think there's going to be more people at Bethpage from CBSSports.com than there's going to be in Fort Lauderdale at our headquarters.
And I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make the cut again.
During that week. Yeah. You should be live blogging your brains out. But, yeah, I mean, here's my question to you, though. Like, I agree with you, and I think it's incredible. It's sort of weird, like, it's sort of unnerving that there's another major so close. But do you think that there's going to be more, like, would there be more hype? Will there be more hype around, like, going into this PGA a month after Tiger won the Masters at a place where he's won? Or would there be more if the schedule was like it was last year and Tiger would be going from Augusta to Pebble, but you'd have, you know, 2 months in between instead? Which one do you think would create more hype?
I think that this one creates more hype because it doesn't leave the long layoff, and it doesn't leave kind of the false start of trying to get you, because Tiger, we assume, would, let's say if this was the old schedule, he probably plays Wells, and that Wells would have been mid-May, right?
Like
a week or two later. That would have been a little bit of a false start, because we would have gotten everybody fired up to come and see Tiger playing after he's won the green jacket. And he would go around Quail, and he might be competitive. He'd draw massive crowds, but ultimately that event's probably going to be won by what? Shea Reve?
Well, Jason Day won it last year. And isn't Tiger playing Charlotte next week?
He is.
So, you're right. Like, instead of that being seen as, like, you know, Tiger's, like, barnstorming the country or whatever after winning the Masters, it's more like a between the Masters and PGA tune-up.
Right.
Right? And so, like, even the way that his tournaments are viewed now, I think, is different. What if he wins the PGA?
He might.
What would that be like going to Pebble?
I mean, it would... I think that we would crank up to 5 episodes a week.
We would. I think, like, when we talk about Tiger, like, it's such the perfect scenario, right? Like, him, like, he had to win Augusta. Like, that was the place he had to win, right? And then he had to do it in the year when the U.S. Open's going to Pebble. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, how is this the scenario that we're getting?
I think that for the... To keep everybody around and to keep everybody nearby, the new time for the PGA Championship it's allowed two things. Number one, we're not quite to finals and in the Stanley Cup and in the NBA playoffs. We're still kind of hovering in, like, late conference semifinals, maybe conference finals. And if you've got any of the fatigue from those two sports and their respective, you know, 40-day, 40-night playoff routines, then you're going to be fired up and you're going to be dialed in. We've got it on the East Coast, so we got, you know, maximum viewing windows and you know, everything working to the East Coast bias. And this is another aspect that I hadn't really started to wrap my mind around, but when the PGA Championship has been in later in the summer, you know, there are the challenges in terms of course maintenance, course upkeep. You know, they basically have had to, in order to, like, keep the courses looking lush and green and spectacular, it requires a lot more work than maybe whatever you're going to have to do in May, especially in New York in May. I think that where we have considered the PGA Championship to be You know, the kind of course, you know, stadiums like wide open, go and get it, low scores. I wonder if we see, especially here in this first one, that start to change just by the fact that you're playing it a few months up in the season.
Yeah, I do think it creates a different set of challenging circumstances, though, because I haven't looked at the weather for Bethpage, but New York in the middle of May, kind of dicey, right? I mean, not definitely in the 60s and 70s or 80s or whatever. Like, might be in the 50s. I don't know. So yes, you're right, but I think it's gonna create like potentially a different kind. Like last year at Bellerive, it felt like 40 under won the tournament. I know that's not actually true. That's what it felt like. It almost seems like it's gonna feel that 5 under is gonna win the PGA. I don't know what the actual number is gonna be, but it feels like it's gonna play more difficult just because of, you know, the type of weather that you could get in New York in May.
Do you think that this is going to how far have we built out the PGA Championship rotation? Doesn't the move also just open up a lot of different options of where they can take it?
Yeah, it does. You can kind of. I mean, you can go further south now. Like, you don't want to go play. It is kind of funny, too, because this dovetails with them going to I read there was an article. I think it was on golf.com. I saw it on Jeff Shackelford's site. About how the PGA of America is moving to Frisco. This is not new. This is not breaking news. This has been announced for a while, but they sort of some information came out this week about the courses and about how it's like they're going to have two PGAs there in the next 15 years. And you're like, you would never ever. I live like 20 minutes from Frisco. You would not want to have a PGA in Frisco in August. People would be like wilting. Like people would be passing out. But here, and this is a tangent, but like, here's the interesting part about, like, I feel like everybody's just acting like these courses, which are going to be built by Gil Hance and somebody else who I don't remember, they're just presumed that they'll get the 2040 Ryder Cup, which is crazy, right? Like, the Ryder Cup coming to Frisco, Texas?
That's...
How do we feel about that?
I cannot listen. Did you just say the 2040 Ryder Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Sorry. Can't get there.
But the rest of them are already planned. Like, they're planned through 34.
Yeah, I've got when Oklahoma and LSU announced their future series for 2032 and 2036. I think I roll my eyes. Not there yet. You're telling me that everything is going to still be working just the way it is? You're going to make those kind of plans? Okay. All right.
So next year's PGA is at Harding Park, San Francisco. That could be cold. 2021 is at Kiowa, South Carolina. Should be good. 22 is Trump in New Jersey, Trump National in New Jersey. Dicey. 2023 is Oak Hill and New York. Dicey. And then you go Valhalla, Arana Mink in Pennsylvania, Olympic in San Francisco, Baltusrol, Southern Hills, Congressional, and you work in some Friscos in there at some point.
We don't have a lot of heat with the rest of the major season. We go PGA at Bethpage, U.S. Open at Pebble, and then Royal Portrush.
Well, and that's funny because Augusta might have been the hottest. I mean, it was hot at Augusta this year. That might be the hottest one we get.
Was I right that it was kind of stinky?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It just when it's that hot and humid and you've got a lot of people jammed together, whether it's in the media center or just out among the patrons, like, it's just, it smells.
Mm-hmm. And they had to put down like gravel and stuff because of all the water. And it smelled like J.B. Holmes.
We will get into some of our expectations for the Zurich Classic, including some pairings that we wish were there right after this.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right. And now it's time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. We're going to branch into some of the pairings here because I want to get from beginning to end. We saw a lot from Adam Scott at Augusta National. And the beginning sort of suggested that this could be a year that he has followed up on some pretty solid play, but he has not always had the strongest finishes in golf tournaments, and some of his performance has been inconsistent. You know, you see a streak of holes where it looks like he is going to be able to contend to win. Looks like he's found something, particularly on the greens, and then he just looks totally lost, sometimes in the same round, and then at Augusta, it was really more near the end. So as we've looked back at Adam Scott's last couple weeks, you know, is this a stock up or a stock down for you as we start to push ahead and look towards the next three majors of the season?
That's a good one. I think that's I'm looking up his numbers so far because you could tell me that his numbers are anything, and I would believe it, just because I feel like we've seen him kind of all over the map this year, right? Like he's leading the Masters, and then he finishes outside the top 10, I think. He is I'm going to go stock up. His numbers are solid. So he's 15th in strokes gained total. He's 14. Adam Scott's 14th in putting.
I'm telling you, he's found something. They've talked about it on some of the broadcasts, or at least the featured group broadcasts, not for the Masters, but in one of the tournaments in the last couple weeks. But like, you know, as he's continually had to make the adjustments post all the putter changes. I mean, he changed putters in the middle of tournaments. He's a little bit lost, but yet somehow, you know, continues to tinker with it. Just a mad scientist putting right now.
Well, remember when didn't he play with two putters at Belrive in the final round last year?
Two in the same bag.
Yeah, it was insane. So here's the interesting part about his putting. From 4 to 8 feet, he's 200th on the PGA Tour. Not good. From inside 10 feet, he's 183rd. Not good. But here's where it gets interesting. From 10 to 15 feet, he's 12th. And from 15 to 20 feet, he's first.
What in the world kind of stat profile is that?
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I think the thing that you keep hearing on the broadcast that's a little bit of fake news is that, oh, well, leaving the pin in has made him really good from shorter distances. And it's like, well, the numbers tell me he's 200th from 4 to 8 feet. So that seems like not the truth. But in terms of like making putts from long distances, he's been really good. And if you look at his strokes gained overall in putting, he's, like I said, 14th. Which that's pretty solid. I mean, that's really good, especially for for him. Tee to green, he's 37th, and then overall he's 15th. So I would have to say stock up. You know, the results haven't been there. He went second at Farmers, T7 at Riviera, and then his other top 10 was at the CJ Cup in the fall. So he didn't, you know, he it didn't kind of pan out at Augusta like you would have wanted, but he's having a good year. You know, I think Scott's so interesting because it seems like we sort of, he gets lost a little bit. You're like, oh yeah, Adam Scott's got 12 PGA Tour wins. That's a lot.
Right.
That's more than a lot of the guys that we talk about. Tommy Fleetwood has none, you know, Ricky Fowler's got 5, Brooks Koepka's got 4, or I guess 5. It's a lot more than a lot of guys we talk about all the time. But he gets a little bit lost cause he's, you know, older, hasn't been that great at major championships in recent years. But I for this season, I would say stock up.
I would say stock up because if you're competing as a top, like based on his stat profile, I would say that Adam Scott right now is a top 30 golfer.
Yeah, I would go top 25.
Top 25 golfer, and to be a top 25 golfer, a major champion at the age of 38, and to be able to have those kinds of results where, you know, his last four starts, like since mid-February, T7, you know, missed cut at Honda, T12, T18. I mean, he's in the mix. He's got a top 20, top 30 scoring average. And if you've got that at this point, then I think that is stock up from clearly what was a little bit of a lost period somewhere, what, maybe 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, and I think you see it, and it, again, like lost is a relative term because it's not like he was, you know, missing cuts and like not relevant. Like if you look at his major profile here, so I'm looking at from 2011 to 2015, he had 11 top 10s at majors in those 5 years. That's a lot.
That's a top 10 almost every other major.
That's 2 a year, and he won the Masters in 13. But then, what you're referencing, and I think what is true, from 2016, 17, 18, 19, so the last 4 years, which is 13 majors, he's only had 2 top 10s.
Mm.
And he's been missing some cuts. He's got T61, T42, not really in it. You know, the lone exception was probably the PGA at Belrive last year. So I think when you look at that, you're like, he's not a disappointment, but it feels like, and you're going to say, I, this is my big thing with this generation. You're going to say the following sentence about a lot of guys 20 years from now, man, it feels like that guy should have won more majors. And he's one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, and legitimately, like, he should have won the 12 Open that Ernie Els ended up winning. Like, don't bogey the last 4 holes. But, you know, Justin Rose feels like he should have won more majors. Dustin Johnson feels like he should have won more majors. Jason Day, they all have one major, which is crazy.
And that is Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. Adam Scott from starting to recapture some of that early aughts success here in the last year, and that's exciting for Adam Scott. Adam Scott is paired up with fellow Aussie Jason Day in the Zurich Classic. He is one of, you know, I would say that we've got more interesting pairings than necessarily headliners, and I would say that the other, we mentioned Bubba Watson and JB Holmes, but in terms of our showstoppers, and headliners, it's probably Day and Scott, and certainly best looking. And then Sergio and Tommy Fleetwood's probably right there with them.
Sergio Fleetwood is just a ball striking, just extravaganza. I mean, it's just the purest duo you can pretty much get in terms of ball striking, in terms of iron play.
I'm fired up
about
that. I'm very concerned that this is caused a rift in Fleetwood and Molinari's relationship and that Fleetwood might not be able to recover.
I love it. I think it's great. I love it when the Euros play together. I might love the European team more than I love the Ryder or the American Ryder Cup team.
You've long been on that.
And I know.
Even admitting it with your picks when you just come out and pick the European squad correctly, I will add. Here's a question. So the John Rahm, Ryan Palmer pairing seemed strange outside of TaylorMade. I know is one shared sponsor. Do they have a relationship, or is this teammates getting together so that they can play the same ball?
Is Ryan Palmer still TaylorMade?
I Googled him, and I saw him in a TaylorMade hat. He might have moved.
Okay. You're probably right about that. I don't know, because Palmer's been playing with Spieth the last couple of years. The first year they played together, I think they finished top 5 or top 10. And then last year they missed the cut. Or I might have my years mixed up there. So I don't know. Apparently Ryan Palmer only plays with, like, Spieth is struggling this year, so Palmer's like, I think I'm going to go with Rahm. I think I'm going to go with a different top 10 guy in the world. I don't know of any relationship outside of a potential, just having the same sponsor.
Wait, does one person get to choose the other? How do these groups get paired together? Who has the invite? Who commits?
I don't. Well, Spieth isn't playing, so I don't know how it works. I do remember there was a story a couple years ago about how Spieth and Palmer came together. I think they were playing golf at Trinity Forest, which I'll be playing on Monday in
Shout
front
out.
Of Byron Nelson. Yeah, fired up about that. But I think they were playing together there, and like they were just kind of, it's kind of like dating, right? You're like, hey, what are you doing last week in April? Take a trip, go hang out, play some golf.
I was wondering if there was like a Tinder for the Zurich Classic. You got to swipe and see if you're a match. And sure enough, Tony Finau and Kyle Stanley, they both liked each other, and now they're going to be meeting up at 7:52 a.m. to tee it off.
Maybe that's how the task force should start selecting the American Ryder Cup team.
It might be a better, it might be better off. So are we going to get, so this foursome, for the first 2 days, do they mix up the pairs, like who's playing together, or do they keep the foursomes together for Thursday and Friday?
Yeah, they keep them together Thursday, Friday. So Thursday is best ball. So that's where you get your 60s, your 61s, your 62s. Friday's alternate shot, which is harder. And then Saturday's best ball and Sunday's alternate shot. So yeah, you'll see the foursomes together for Thursday and Friday. Then just like a regular event, make the cut and then repair for Saturday, Sunday.
So it looks like this foursome, if you're there, you would just want to be with Sergio, Tommy Fleetwood, Kyle F. Stanley, and Tony Finau.
Holy crap. Like find the center of the club face more than that group.
Right. I'm saying.
That's a joke.
That's I would say that that's probably without a doubt my favorite foursome. Some of my favorite pairings. Which ones either for their ability to maybe win this thing or just for entertainment purposes, who are you going to have your eyes on when you're watching this thing?
I love the Patrick group, Patrick Cantlay, Patrick Reed, just because their personalities are just, they're both very different than I think like normal PGA Tour players, but they're not the same as each other. So that's interesting. They've played well there too. I think they had a top 10. I think they've had actually two top 10s or two top 15s, something like that. Let's see here. The brothers Koepka are together.
Oh,
that's interesting.
That's right. So Chase is a PGA Tour player.
No, he's not. I was doing research on this. He played the European Tour last year. Actually, I think he played the Challenge Tour last year, which is basically the Europeans. European Tours web.com.
Got it.
Right. But then I was looking at 2019. He doesn't have an OWGR event played yet. Like everything for 2019 is blank. So I'm like, what is he doing? Is he playing mini tour? Like, what's the deal? And I can't find any information on it. I mean, I was like deep in this and I couldn't figure it out. Like, it's just retweets of like the Masters Twitter account about what Brooks is doing at Augusta.
It sounds like the situation that happens a lot. I see it in college sports, but I'm sure it happens in all kinds of media events, but like where someone gets credentialed for an event annually, and even if they don't work for the outlet they initially got credentialed for, they keep getting credentialed. And then yes. like before you know it, I'm showing up at ACC Media Day. Hey, Coach Chip Patterson, chippatterson.com. I was wondering about the running backs. like Chase Koepka just sort of had his subscription on auto renew. He put down his credit card to make sure for incidentals in the hotel, and just made sure that he was going to keep getting invited with Brooks back every year, even if he didn't have the credentials that he had the first time.
That's what it feels like. It really does. I think kind of a sneaky fun group is where was it? Where am I? I'm lost. Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown.
Mm.
Kisner obviously coming off a match play win. They finished second to Jonas Blixt and Cam Smith 2 years ago. And it was a Monday finish. Do you remember that? And
yes.
Kisner chipped in from like 60 yards, not 60 yards. It was probably like 30 yards. On the final hole to get into a playoff. And then they put like one hole on Monday morning. You're like, oh, well, this is literally the most anticlimactic ending to a PGA Tour event of all time.
But it was Jonas Blixt's gushing of Cameron Smith and Lil Cameron Smith's sheepish face as it was happening that had me buy all of the Cameron Smith stock.
Yeah, for sure.
Last year was Horschel and Piercy, right?
Horschel and Piercy won it last year.
That's right.
Graham McDowell, Henrik Stenson was probably the funniest group. That would be the group that I would like want to hang with.
No, I want to hang with Duffner and Pat Perez.
No, that would get you. That would be trouble. That would be. It would be fun, and then it would be like, oh, this might not be fun anymore.
Right. It's like Las Vegas. It's fun until it's not.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. So, who would you want to see? Like, who are some of the pairings that you would want to see in this event?
Well, probably Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolff is number one.
Go Pokes.
Yeah. I don't know if you can get in as an amateur that's still playing in college. I don't think you can. Maybe the Zurich should have given Victor Hovland, low am at the Masters, a special exemption. Get him and Fowler in there. Isn't Fowler? Oh, no, I guess Fowler is Farmers. I'm getting my insurance companies mixed up. Seriously, though, I think, like, would you – here's the question, and this is the one that everybody always throws out there. Would you want to see Tiger and Phil at this together?
No, I want to see Tiger and Bryson. Yeah, absolutely. I want to see Tiger and Bryson. I want to see them negotiate their way around the swamp, talking to each other about air density.
I want to see Bryson and Brooks.
No,
since they would become the first team to be disqualified for like getting in a fight.
Have you ever seen oil and water mix?
Yeah, you know, I think it'd be fun to see groups. So, like, I wouldn't want a pairing that I could see at a Ryder Cup potentially. I would want like the crossover. I would want like the JT Rory.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to figure out who Rory was going to be paired with. It's got to be Justin Thomas.
Yeah, or like Rory and Spieth, or Rory and Fowler. I think all of those would be super fun.
I want to see. You make a good point about the like not wanting to see an obvious like Ryder Cup pairing, but when it's no longer a Ryder Cup pairing, man, it would be cool if we could have seen Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed at one of these kind of events.
Yeah, that's true.
Just an undercard, just to see if they can get their swag back, see if they can get their mojo. Obviously the Bash brothers, you know, DJ and Brooks, anytime they're not playing together, you kind of wish that you were getting it. And then I would say I don't want Jason Day with anybody but Adam Scott.
I know. I think Rom would be, I think like Rom Ricky or Rom Brooks would be awesome.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it would just be a heavy, just flexing on everybody.
Just nothing but meat.
Who's somebody else that gets just really fired up like Rom that's American?
He's not American, but I was going to say Tyrell Hatton.
Oh my gosh. I hope we get that as a Ryder Cup. They might like the Ryder Cup might have to be like restructured after those two get done with it.
It's going to be on American soil, and that's going to be when a club is going to get thrown at a patron.
Yeah. Okay, here's my actual answer. This is who I want to see. This would be my choice for pairing. Hideki and Sean Martin.
Mm.
Bringing in a writer out of the media center. Just tee it up. Be awesome.
I think that because Sean knows Hideki's game so well, he's going to know what holes Hideki is liable to get lost on. And he's going to be able to, like, the game planning that Sean's going to be able to have on the course to complement what Hideki's going to do might make them unstoppable.
I know. They might win. Sean might just grab, he would get his PGA Tour card, be phenomenal.
That's the crooked way to a PGA Tour card. It starts with the back door into the state college is to go to the community college for a couple years and then get your way in. Back door to the PGA Tour. It's work for PGAtour.com. Get pulled out for a team event. Shout out to Sean Martin. What is the over under on? And so Thursday is our score. We see the super low scores. Friday balances out a little bit. Over under, David Duval, Jim Furyk. Let's say 140 over under.
Their 2-day score?
Yeah.
I think they almost. What is it? Is it 72? Is it par 72?
Let's see. It is. Yes.
So I'm going to go. That's a good one. I'm going to go over.
Can't quite pull it together.
Well, Furyk's playing really well. Duval just doesn't play.
Right.
He instead gets after me on Golf Channel, which is fine.
From something you wrote?
No. Did you not see this?
No.
So we did this look back at the 18 Masters and, we looked at the four guys that were kind of in it. So I kind of looked back at Spieth. Porath had Reed, of course. Ryan Lavner had Ricky.
Was this when you were in studio?
We all filmed at separate times.
Got it.
So Golf Channel ran it on Golf Channel the night before this year's Masters.
Got it.
And so it was like a, I don't know, 5-7 minute deal, whatever. And Eamon Lynch had Rory. And so the way they ended it was with me talking about how bizarre the reaction was to Reed winning. I didn't say this, but it felt like Thorbjørn Olesen tapped in to finish T24. That was the reaction that you got from people on 18.
Right.
And that's sort of how the piece ended. And it was true. I was standing right there. I saw it. I heard it. I didn't say anything that wasn't true. And I basically just said, I've never seen patrons react like this to a winner. And usually, even if they don't like the guy, they appreciate what he's done. And I said, in this case, it didn't even feel like they appreciated it. And Duval hops on after the little piece finishes up. And he said something that's crap. That's bull crap. And I was like, well, were you out there? Like, And I don't know, maybe he wasn't getting after me. Maybe he was like affirming it and saying that he wished it hadn't been like that.
Right.
But it felt like he was like kind of going against what I said. And I was like, well, I was standing there. Like, I'm not making this up. So, yeah, I think Duvall's great, but I think he's wrong about that.
I could see him having a soft spot in his heart for Patrick Reed.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it felt like, and which is fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just, you know, facts only. Like, I don't know what you want me to say here.
So, and that's right, David Duvall, and he said y'all's two-day team score is going over.
No, I mean, look, Furyk's playing great this year. I think they were pretty close to making the cut last year. So I hope they do. Good luck to David Duvall and Jim Furyk.
Good luck to.
Well, hey, they're one of the five teams with the two major winners, both on the team, which is kind of cool.
Also, you've got the Els Immelman,
Schwartzel, and Ustazen.
Scott Day
and who's the other one?
Chase gets one of Brooks's wins.
Oh, it's Stinson and Graham.
Yeah, nice. Graham's major wins at PGA?
No, he won the US Open at Pebble.
Oh my gosh. And
when DJ shot like 100 in the final round.
Oh, one of DJ's epic final collapses.
Yeah.
Boy, hooray for narratives. I'm at this point, we discussed this a lot in the last episode. If you want to go check it out, it was a very good episode. But at this point, I really am starting to hit the point with it's starting to get to the place with Dustin Johnson that I am with, you know, several others where you're just rooting for the story to turn.
In which direction?
I am ready for Dustin Johnson to hold a lead at a major and be able to not collapse, or to be in contention and be able to hit the gas and get it done. I'm ready for Dustin Johnson's second major win, and I'm ready for it to come in a way that is going to, you know, askew all of these trends that we've seen since the 82 in 2010.
Well, you know what's interesting is that I know we joke about like him not knowing his score at Oakmont, but wasn't that like also a weird Sunday start where he didn't have to really sleep on the overnight lead? Remember that because of weather? I think they finished round three like early on Sunday morning and then just kind of like rolled everybody back out there.
Oh, you might be right.
I think that's right, because I remember Thursday almost like getting completely washed out, and I'm pretty sure it spilled into Sunday. So like, I think it's like we're sort of saying the didn't know his score thing in jest, but that part of it is kind of interesting. Like, the only time he's won a major is when he didn't have to sleep on the 54-hole lead.
Yeah. Play was – so he was tied for the lead at the end of the second round Saturday. The second round is completed after 2 p.m. And then the third round began at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Play resumed at 7 a.m. Shane Lowry.
Yeah. He was like 7 under.
Yeah. Shane Lowry was three or four strokes clear of DJ.
Yeah.
And then DJ had to shoot a 69 to chase him down. Shane Lowry fired a 76 and DJ'd it up.
Yeah. DJ'd it up. Can I read you the top 7 at the 2010 U.S. Open at Pebble?
Please.
Graham McDowell wins it with a 74. Gregory Havre finishes one stroke back, the Frenchman. Ernie Els, third, two strokes back. Phil and Tiger tie for fourth. Tiger shot a 75 on Sunday. And then Matt Kuchar and Davis Love finished tied for sixth.
Woo!
at four over. So Tiger, if Tiger shoots par at Pebble on Sunday, he's in a playoff with Graham McDowell.
At Pebble. Yeah. Too much. It's wild looking back on. I'm glad that we're about to expand the podcast, because we're going to spend a lot of time playing this with Tiger.
Oh yeah, I could just get down a Wikipedia rabbit hole.
If Tiger had just fired one stroke better on Friday, totally different tournament.
Literally inches away from 24 major.
Yes. We'll get there eventually. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. Check out his expert picks. Who'd you pick to win?
Who do you think?
Sergio and Tommy.
Yes, of course. I just want to watch it. I don't care to play it. I just want to see it.
Yeah, you can see that on CBSSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.